Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Mikey, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024. TxDOT, fatal crash site not fit for stoplight. By B.K. Richter, staff writer. Ector County. The Texas Department of Transportation says the site of fatal wreck doesn't meet the requirements for a stoplight. On June 25th, a minor was killed and four others were injured following a two-vehicle collision at the intersection for Farm to Market Road 554 and Cottonwood Road. The minor, identified as Arken Garcia, 11, died at the scene. A second minor involved in the incident died days later in Lubbock. However, the Reporter Telegram could not immediately confirm whether the cause of death was from injuries suffered in the accident. Officials with the Lubbock County Medical Examiner's Office confirmed the 16-year-old Axel Garcia's body was being held for autopsy, but could not verify any other information because of Garcia's age. Marianne Cedillo, a public information officer, TxDOT, Odessa District, told the Reporter Telegram the intersection does not meet the requirements for a traffic control device, such as a stoplight. Two traffic studies have been conducted, one in May 2021 and a second in March 2024. Cedillo said that when traffic studies are conducted, TxDOT evaluates the amount of vehicles that use the area. While the Cottonwood and FM-554 intersection does not meet the requirements for a stoplight, Cedillo said that other options for the intersection are being considered. It doesn't mean that we are not looking at other options for the intersection, she said during a phone interview. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett called the incident devastating. This one hurts, he told the Reporter Telegram on Tuesday. The sad part is, this isn't new for the Permian Basin. Three New Restaurants Planned for Midland, by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Three new restaurants will soon be among Midlanders' dining out options. Planning and Zoning Commission members unanimously approved requests for specific use designations with term for the sale of alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption made by the three restaurateurs. Leticia Juarez Gonzalez made her request for her restaurant La Florida to be located at 210 West Longview Avenue. The 2,400-square-foot restaurant will include an alcohol-serviceable area of 1,200 square feet. Proposed hours of operation are 5 a.m. to 2 a.m. the next day, Monday through Sunday. Proposed alcohol service hours are 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. the next day, Monday through Sunday. Lee Sanchez had his request approved for St. Blaise, to be located in the Frost Bank Building at 508 West Wall Street. The restaurant is 2,173 square feet with a proposed alcohol serviceable area of 1,821 square feet. Proposed hours of operation are 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., Monday through Sunday. Proposed alcohol service hours are 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 11 p.m., Sunday. Commissioners approved Marty Gartro's request for a permit to serve beer and wine at his Marty G's Cajun restaurant, located in the former The Rick Tacos location at 5701 Starboard Drive. The restaurant includes 1,000 square feet of dining space and a 775 square foot outside patio. Proposed hours of operation and alcohol service are 11 a.m. to midnight, Monday through Saturday. Commissioners also approved a request by James Books Reader for a zone change from RR, Regional Retail District, to PD, Planned Development District, for an office center for his Midland Self-Storage at 3600 North Big Spring Street. The request was made in order to expand the business by adding 24 units. While it is not on the public hearing agenda, Zoo Midland received approval of a preliminary plat for its off-site center at 1507 Todd Drive. The property will be used for storage space, house a greenhouse to grow food for the zoo's animals, and prepare the food and provide an off-site area to briefly receive and quarantine animals before they are introduced into the zoo's general population. Commissioners had approved a specific use designation for the site back in April. MISD provides bond update. Progress on new elementary school, two high schools discussed at meeting. By Kesley Salinas, staff writer. A Midland ISD 2023 bond update was provided at last week's school board meeting. The Midland ISD bond 2023 was approved in November, and highlights include building a new elementary school and two high schools. The bond update included a breakdown of June's progress and a look into the next steps that need to be taken. June's breakdown. Number 1. A groundbreaking ceremony was held at the site of the new elementary school in the Lone Star Trails area in North Midland on June 4th. The district has also ordered and purchased early equipment for the new elementary school. MISD expects the equipment to arrive 6 months before the opening date of the school. Number 2. Surveying geotechnical services are underway at the sites of the new high schools, as well as Midland Freshman and Goddard Junior High. Number 3. The district will have a budget price confirmation for the two new high schools by the end of August. They will also look at the design and renderings of the new high schools. Number 4. On June 10th, the district purchased orders for school safety and security, Package 6 of Bond, at Midland Freshman Site Improvements, Package 7 of Bond. Moving forward. Construction of schools. The board unanimously approved the construction manager at risk, CMAR, firms for the new Midland High and Legacy High. The two highest ranked CMAR firms for the new high schools were Satterford and Pong Tykes, based in Houston, and Lee Lewis Construction, based in Lubbock. John Marshall, Executive Vice President and Chief Revenue Officer for Satterfield and Pong Tykes, introduced team members Nick Flannery, Kaylin Shearer, George A. Pontex Jr., CEO of the firm, and Barclay Pittman, the lead of construction at the new Legacy High, to the board. On behalf of this executive team tonight, we're really grateful for the opportunity, Marshall said. As exciting as the promise is of the new school, the progress and the reality is going to be even better. Neil Easter, Executive Vice President of Lee Lewis Construction, said that he has worked with MISD before and looks forward to continuing that relationship. We are really excited about the new changes that these schools will bring to the community, Easter said. We look forward to helping y'all the best way that we can. The total estimated construction cost for both high schools is $841,400,000. Construction inspecting / testing pool. The board also voted to approve a pool of architects and engineers for construction materials testing, CMT, services for projects associated with the bond. Vendors include Atlas Technical Consultants, MEG Engineers, Terracon Incorporated, Beyond Engineering and Testing LLC, and Intertech Professional Service Industries. Beyond Engineering and Testing LLC was approved for CMT services at the new elementary school. Terracon Incorporated was approved to provide the geotechnical services for Middle School Renovations Group B, Package 5 of the bond. Project packages. The district will also begin to assign the next group of project packages. There are currently 7 project packages. County. Scammers pretending to be warrant services. Residents advised to be cautious when receiving unexpected phone calls demanding personal details, payments. By Trevor Halls, Editorial Director. Midland County has issued a warning that a phone scam is taking place in the community. Scammers are spoofing the warrant services phone number to make it seem like a legitimate call from this county department. The caller claims to be from Warrant Services, tells the MARC that they have outstanding warrants, and says they need to take urgent action by getting in contact with Officer Green. We don't have an Officer Green that works for our office, said Tate Owen, Midland County Public Information Officer. Owen told the Reporter Telegram that warrant notifications are sent by mail on a postcard. At least 2 fraudulent phone calls have been reported so far. Warrant Services says to be cautious when receiving unexpected phone calls demanding personal information and payments. If you have any information regarding these fraudulent activities, call Warrant Services at 432-688-4700. NHTSA offers tips to prevent hot car deaths this summer by BK Richter, staff writer. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration cites that, on average, 40 children die a year from heat stroke, either because they were left in a car or were trapped in it. The agency, which is part of the U.S. Department of Transportation, says 53% of hot car deaths occur because someone forgets a child in a car. It offered tips for keeping children safe during sizzling summer temperatures. NHTSA says parents and caregivers should get in the habit of always checking the back seat of a vehicle before locking the door. Other tips advised included placing a briefcase, purse, or mobile phone next to the child's car seat so that you will always check the back seat before leaving the car. The NHTSA also recommends keeping a stuffed animal or other toys in a child's car seat when it is empty. When one's child is in the back seat, then move the toy to the front seat as a visual reminder. Also, parents are encouraged to set a rule for their child care provider by having them call if a child does not arrive at school as scheduled. The NHTSA says hot car deaths don't just happen when a child is forgotten. Child fatalities also occur when children get into unattended vehicles. The public is advised to always lock car doors and trunks, not just during the summer, but year-round. Temperatures inside vehicles can reach more than 115 degrees, even if it's 70 degrees outside. Here are some tips for keeping children out of unattended vehicles. Number 1. Never let children play in an unattended vehicle. Teach them a vehicle is not a play area. Number 2. Keep car keys out of a child's reach. And number 3. If a child is missing, quickly check all vehicles, including the trunk. As for concerned members of the public, if you see a child alone in a vehicle, make sure the child is responsible and okay. If the child is not responsive, then immediately call 911. The NHTSA advises that if a child appears to be unresponsive and in distress, attempt to get into the vehicle to assist, even if that means breaking a window to do so. Many states have Good Samaritan laws that protect people from lawsuits for getting involved to help a person in an emergency, NHTSA shared on their website. Last but not least, never leave a child alone in a vehicle. While all types of hot car deaths are preventable, the third leading cause of these deaths, knowingly leaving a child, is the most preventable, NHTSA said. Never leave a child alone in a parked car. Rolling windows down or parking in the shade does little to change the interior temperature of the vehicle. A child's body temperature can rise 3 to 5 times faster than an adult's. It's just a beautiful, beautiful memorial. Plans to demolish Texas church, site of deadly 2017 shooting, draw visitors back to sanctuary. By Fernanda Figueroa and Jamie Stengel, Associated Press. Sutherland Springs, Texas. Plans to tear down a small Texas church where a gunman in 2017 killed more than 24 worshipers drew visitors Tuesday as a last-minute push was made to stop the demolition. Leaders of First Baptist Church of Sutherland Springs have not publicly announced when it plans to demolish the sanctuary, where authorities put the number of dead from the shooting at 26 people, including a pregnant woman and her unborn baby, and what remains the deadliest church shooting in U.S. history. Roxana Avance, 71, moved to Sutherland Springs after the shooting and said she was at the church Tuesday to support those who lost loved ones in the shooting. Avance said, even if people don't want to walk past a reminder of a tragedy, the church is still a house of God and a memorial for those who died in 2017. On Tuesday, a Texas judge approved a temporary restraining order sought by some families to delay the demolition. The order signed by Judge Jennifer Dillingham instructs the church to not begin demolition and to appear before the court later this month. But Sam Fugate II, an attorney for the families that sought the restraining order, said the church had still not been served the order as of Tuesday afternoon and expressed concern that the demolition could still proceed. Christine Earnhardt, a secretary for the church, said Tuesday that she could not confirm whether a demolition was scheduled and that the church had no plans to comment or make a statement. Following the shooting, the sanctuary was turned into a memorial. The interior was painted white, and chairs with the names of those who were killed were placed there, the lawsuit said. The church then voted in 2021 to tear down the building, which opponents have contended was against the wishes of many surviving family members. A new church was completed for the congregation about a year and a half after the shooting. "We're not after money, we're after what's fair," Fugate said. "We want our clients to say their piece about whether the church should stand and take another vote." Amber Holder, a church member who is one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, said she wanted to make sure survivors of the shooting and the victims' families have a vote. "So many victims' families were told, 'You are not allowed to vote because you are no longer a member here,'" Holder said. Holder said she wasn't at the service the day of the shooting, but got there shortly after. As a teen, she was taken in by the family of the pastor at the time, whose 14-year-old daughter, Annabelle Pomeroy, was among those killed. Terry Smith, president of the Sutherland Springs Community Association, said that as news of the upcoming demolition spread in the community of less than 1,000 people, those she had spoken with were devastated. Smith said that a woman who was like a daughter to her, Joan Ward, and her two daughters, ages 7 and 5, were among those killed in the shooting. Smith, who is not a member of the church, said she often visits the memorial sanctuary. "It's just a beautiful, beautiful memorial the way it is now," she said. "You feel the comfort of everybody that was lost there," Smith said. Trump's sentencing delayed. Postponement comes as judge weighs Supreme Court's immunity ruling. By Jake Offenhortz, Associated Press. In a major reprieve for former President Donald Trump, sentencing for his hush money convictions was postponed Tuesday until at least September, if ever, as the judge agreed to weigh the possible impact of a new Supreme Court ruling on presidential immunity. Trump had been scheduled to face sentencing July 11th, just before the Republicans' nominating convention, on his New York convictions on felony charges of falsifying business records. He denies any wrongdoing. The postponement sets the sentencing for September 18th at the earliest, if it happens at all, since Trump's lawyers are arguing that the Supreme Court ruling merits not only delaying the sentencing, but tossing out his conviction. "The impact of the immunity ruling is a loud and clear signal for justice in the United States," Trump cried on his Truth social media site after the sentencing was delayed. Using all capital letters, he claimed the Supreme Court's decision netted him total exoneration in this and other criminal cases he faces. There was no immediate comment on the sentencing postponement from Manhattan prosecutors, who brought the hush money case. Though the September 18th date is well after this month's Republican National Convention, where Trump is set to formally accept the party's nomination for president in this year's race, it is far closer to Election Day, which could put the issue top of mind for voters just as they seriously tune into the race. Because of absentee voting timelines in certain states, some voters may already have cast ballots before anyone knows whether the former president will have to spend time in jail or on home confinement. The delay caps a string of political and legal wins for Trump in recent days, including the Supreme Court's immunity ruling and a debate widely seen as a disaster for Democratic President Joe Biden. The immunity decision all but closed the door on the possibility that Trump could face trial in his 2020 election interference case in Washington before this November's vote. The timeline in itself is a victory for the former president, who has sought to delay his four criminal cases past the balloting. An appeals court recently paused a separate election interference case against Trump in Georgia. No trial date has been set. His federal classified documents case in Florida remains bogged down by pretrial disputes that have resulted in an indefinite cancellation of the trial date. Monday's Supreme Court ruling granted broad immunity protections to presidents, while also restricting prosecutors from citing any official acts as evidence in trying to prove a president's unofficial actions violated the law. The High Court held that former presidents are absolutely immune from prosecution for actions that fall within their core constitutional duties, such as interacting with the Justice Department, and at least presumptively immune for all other official acts. The justices left intact the long-standing principle that no immunity exists for purely personal acts. It's not clear how the decision will affect the New York hush money case. Its underpinnings involved allegations that a pre-presidency Trump participated in a scheme to stifle sex stories that he feared would be damaging to his 2016 campaign. But the actual charges had to do with payments made in 2017 to his then-lawyer, Michael Cohen, who had shelled out hush money on Trump's behalf. Trump was president when he signed relevant checks to Cohen. Trump's lawyers sought unsuccessfully before the trial to keep out certain evidence that they said concerned official acts, including social media posts he made as president. Merchant said in April, "It would be hard to convince me that something that he tweeted out to millions of people voluntarily cannot be used in court when it's not being presented as a crime. It's just being used as an act, something he did." When Trump vied unsuccessfully last year to get the hush money case moved from state court to federal court, U.S. District Judge Alvin Hellerstein rejected the former president's claim that allegations in the hush money indictment involved official duties. The evidence overwhelmingly suggests that the matter was a purely personal item of the president, a cover-up of an embarrassing event, Hellerstein wrote last year. Hours after Monday's Supreme Court ruling, Trump's attorney requested that New York Judge Juan M. Merchan set aside the jury's guilty verdict and delay the sentencing to consider how the high court's ruling could affect the hush money case. Merchan wrote that he'll rule September 6th, and the next date in the case would be September 18th, if such is still necessary. In the defense filing Monday, Trump's attorney argued that Manhattan prosecutors had placed highly prejudicial emphasis on official acts evidence, including Trump's social media posts and witness testimony about Oval Office meetings. Prosecutors responded that they believed those arguments were without merit, but that they wouldn't oppose adjourning the sentencing for 2 weeks as the judge considers the matter. Trump was convicted May 30th on 34 counts of falsifying business records arising from what prosecutors said was an attempt to cover up a $130,000 hush money payment to porn actor Stormy Daniels just before the 2016 presidential election. Falsifying business records is punishable by up to 4 years behind bars. Other potential sentences include probation, a fine, or a conditional discharge, which would require Trump to stay out of trouble to avoid additional punishment. Life Tributes. Christy Joe Fredenberg, October 16, 1962 to June 29, 2024. Christy Joe Fredenberg entered into the presence of the Lord on the 29th of June at the age of 61 in her home in Midland, surrounded by her loving family. Christy was a caring wife, devoted mother, and true believer in Jesus Christ. She was preceded in death by her father, Jill Bartosz. A memorial service will be held on Wednesday, July 10th, 2024, at 2 p.m. at Stonegate Fellowship, 6000 West Wadley Avenue in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. David Ray Valencia, June 7, 1964 to June 26, 2024. David Ray Valencia, who was born in Midland, Texas on June 7, 1964, passed away on June 26, 2024. As per David's wishes, there will not be a formal funeral service. Instead, a celebration of his life will take place on July 20th at 6 p.m. at the residence of Derek and Sissy Hatfield, located at 4008 North County Road, 1247, Midland, Texas, 79707. This will be an informal gathering of family and close friends to honor David's memory with one final party. In lieu of flowers, the family kindly requests that donations be made in David's honor to a nonprofit organization of your choice.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024. Cancer. PET CT scans aid prostate cancer detection. American Cancer Society estimates in the United States alone, there will be 299,010 new cases of prostate cancer. There also will be 35,250 deaths from prostate cancer. This makes prostate cancer the second most common cancer in American men. About 1 in 8 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer during his lifetime, and out of those, 1 in 41 will die from it. Most of these cases are men 65 years or older. In current practice, prostate screening can be done by doing a blood test examining prostate-specific antigen, PSA, levels in the blood. High levels in the blood would possibly indicate malignancy. Another test is doing a digital rectal exam, DRE. This involves a rectal examination palpating the prostate gland to see if the gland is enlarged. If these two examinations are abnormal, a biopsy is usually done to determine if the prostate gland has cancerous cells. There are a few limitations to these examinations described above. The PSA levels and DRE examination can't confirm cancer. Normal conditions or lifestyles may rise your PSA levels naturally and are not abnormal, even though the levels are high. Speaking with your provider and getting a full history will help ruling these out first. DRE examinations are less effective than PSA blood tests, but sometimes can find cancers in men with normal PSA levels. Abnormal findings of these exams are based by each provider's discretion and may vary. Biopsies are good in examining tissue in the prostate. Most often, the doctor will do 12 core samples from different parts of the prostate. Local anesthetic is used to reduce discomfort during this procedure. To be effective, 12 core samples are obtained to evaluate for abnormal tissue. Recently, new PET CT tracers such as 18F, DCF, PYL, also known as PlifluFloSat F18 or Pylarify, have been an excellent way to detect prostate cancer cells. The tracer 18F DCF PYL in PET CT imaging attaches to prostate-specific membrane antigen, PSMA, a protein that is often found in large amounts on prostate cancer cells. The scan covers a large area from the top of the head to mid-thigh. Having such a large area to scan is beneficial because you can look for distant metastasis, if any. The information from the scan can show if the patient has prostate cancer in the bones and soft tissue. This scan also has a higher sensitivity to detecting cancerous cells compared to CT, MRI, and bone scans. It is believed that this scan will be the gold standard because of its ability to scan a large area, detect small lesions, evaluate patients, and increased low PSA levels after treatment. Ability to detect cancer in the bones and soft tissue. This is the information your provider and oncologist need to stage or restage your cancer. This helps your provider choose the most effective treatment for your specific condition. In some cases, this gives peace of mind to some of the patients when the scan shows distant metastasis. If it does happen that there is distant metastasis, it is also beneficial to have this scan because you can get treatment soon and effectively before the disease progresses onto other sites. This disease is considered a salvageable disease when it is detected early on. That is why the PET CT PSMA scan is highly recommended. What can you expect when setting up this scan? Your doctor will call our facility to set up your appointment. They will make sure your insurance gets authorization to approve the scan before you arrive. The day before the scan, one of our nuclear medicine technologists, NMT, will call you to confirm your appointment and give you a few instructions. Part of these instructions are to hydrate the morning of the scan, fast for 4, and wear comfortable clothing without metal material. You will come into our facility on the day of the scan. You will get registered and fill out a few forms. Next, you will come into our nurse's station to get an IV and start drinking oral contrast. Then you will be brought to our PET CT suite. Here, the NMT will ask you several questions to get a good history. After this, you will get injected with the 18F DCF PYL and wait an incubation period of 90 to 120 minutes. During this time, you will keep hydrating with water and be encouraged to use the restroom frequently. Once the incubation time is completed, you empty your bladder one last time and we'll get on our scanner. You'll be imaged for about 30 minutes. The scanner will do two different types of scans at the same time, a PET and CT. PET CT. The PET will show highlighted areas where the 18F-DCF-PYL accumulates concerning for prostate cancer cells. The CT will tell you the specific location of where the 18F-DCF-PYL is located. The fusion imaging is the best way to evaluate these scans. In total, you were looking at being with us for 2.5 to 3 hours. Since you received a pharmaceutical, you will be asked to keep a 6 feet distance from children and pregnant women for the next 10 hours. After this period, the pharmaceutical will completely be out of your system. Hydration also helps this process work better. Within the next 2 business days, your provider will get the results from the scan. After this, your provider or oncologist will discuss your results and decide on a treatment plan. PET-CT PSMA imaging is one of the best available scans for patients with prostate cancer, as it continues to show its ability to detect prostate cancer cells due to the higher sensitivity in PET-CT imaging. This will be the best choice of scan for prostate cancer patients.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.